humanity has to stand up and speak for humanity. I don't think there are leaders capable of doing it. And so the more we sit
around...
Why
is that?
Because the system is so corrupt at this point. It's at a maximum state of corruption, and to even get into that system, to get a position, to be in a political position, to be in a corporate position, you would have had to have sold out eons ago. So those people are not reachable by conscience. They're only reachable by pocketbook. So it calls for people with conscience to be conscious of what we're doing with our money, with our energy, with our time, and be willing to say, I'm not going to work for a corporation that's killing people.
I think that's right on target.
You know, that's the only way, is that humanity has to stand up and
listen,
stop waiting for a savior.
You're probably embarrassed at this request, but sometime, maybe not tonight, although I will listen intently and hope that you will accommodate me. I'd love to hear about your background. A lot of us are not long-term listeners and don't. I've listened to you a number of times, but I'd be very interested in knowing who you are, you know, where you come from, what your experience has been. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, well,
I mean, go back to when you were kids. I'd love to know a little bit more about you.
All right, I'll think about that. But I have to go now. It's time for Hour of the Wolf. Thank you.
The prayer of the children on bended knee, in the shadow of an unknown room, empty eyes with no more tears to cry, turning heavenward toward the light, cry, Jesus, help me to see the morning light of one more. But if I should die before I wake, I pray my soul to take. Can you feel the hearts of the children aching for home, for something of their very own, reaching hands with nothing to hold on to, but hope for a better day, a better day. Crying, Jesus, help me to feel the love again in my own land. But if unknown roads lead away from home, give me loving. Can you hear
the prayer of the children.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night, Thursday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and enchantment. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, a classic but modern radio drama, Ice Bootstraps, based on a short story by Robert Heinlein, starring
Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The fascinating thing about the new fantasy film Paddington is how it ushers the marmalade sandwich into the pantheon of cinematic signifiers. Marmalade is, of course, the foodstuff of choice of Paddington, a young CG-animated bear voiced by Ben Whishaw, and like the Ring of Power or lightsaber, it defines the character, who was born in the jungles of Peru and represents his assimilation into British civilization. And for American audiences, this may make sense. In addition to the bear's fusty, floppy hat, his very proper manners, and the tag on his coat that reads, "Please look after this bear," reminiscent of the children who were relocated in World War II during the London bombings, the marmalade sandwich may seem the most British of consumables. But this is actually quite deceptive, since marmalade owes more of its commercial origin to Scotland than to Britain proper. In fact, it was the Scottish family of Keeler who established the first marmalade plant in 1797, and they were also responsible for the first commercially produced Dundee cake, named, of course, after the Scottish city, whose economy presently is more dependent on the biomedical field, and whose football club, Dundee FC, is well-regarded among the Scottish. Oh, hell, you just want me to talk about Peter Capaldi, don't you? Yes, the actor who now plays the 12th Doctor is in Paddington as one of the live-action performers playing against the animated bear. No, it's not a lead role, but as the cantankerous Mr. Curry, neighbor to the family who eventually wind up the de facto adoptive family of the earnest but accident-prone Paddington, it is a prominent role, to the point where he briefly joins forces with the amoral taxidermist played by Nicole Kidman, who wants nothing more than to see the bear stuffed and mounted in her museum. Not surprisingly, particularly if you know Capaldi as much from his work as the scarily imposing and foul-mouthed political fixer Malcolm Tucker in the TV series The Thick of It and the film In the Loop, the actor handles his role with aplomb and is one of the pleasant features in a film that does have a number of them. Only those fans whose interest in Paddington hinges solely on Capaldi's participation will be disappointed. Thing is, the operating principle of Paddington as a whole is not to lean too heavily on any one element or another. The film was directed and co-written by Paul King, who counts among his other credits The Mighty Boosh, a comedy TV series that regularly used a narrative line to draw together a number of tonally diverse, sketch-like bits. The same aesthetic is at work here, toned down to family-friendly proportions. Basically, if you don't like the Paddington you're presently watching, just wait. Another one will be around in a few seconds. A little slapstick comedy cadged from the chapters of the Paddington books here, some Wes Anderson posturing there, even a bit of Buster Keaton attitude. At a couple of points, a dollhouse in an attic spontaneously opens to take care of some exposition. It all gets thrown into the mix. Not all of it works. An opening sequence showing Paddington's life in Peru with his aunt and uncle feels like a textbook example of how insubstantial CG animation can be. A sequence that references Mission Impossible by quoting the visuals of the film franchise and the music of the original series feels a little too forced, and the whole villainous taxidermist bit, as entertaining as Kidman is in the role, feels kind of stock and unnecessary. This is what a family film may call for these days, this kind of jeopardy, although it never gets scary enough to unsettle the kids. One doesn't always have to answer the call, though. All told, Paddington pops along pleasantly enough. There's enough funny stuff and some nicely done imagery along the way, and even the flubs aren't especially painful. Not one for the ages, but like the humble marmalade sandwich, it'll sustain you. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website. So check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.
Indeed. And good morning again. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name's Jim Freund. And last week, Dan, who was also here live, reviewed a new movie called Predestination, which I have not yet seen, but is based on the Robert Heinlein story, All You Zombies. I can well understand why they wouldn't maintain that title, All You Zombies, because then all these people are going to flock to the theater to see a zombie movie and instead get a time travel piece, one that, if it resembles the aforementioned Doctor Who, is because I suspect that Stephen Moffat is somewhat influenced, as so many people are, by the writings of Heinlein. And the way that Heinlein pulls together time travel and how things fit together, something that Moffat does so incredibly well in episodes of Doctor Who that he's written, like Blink, and the final episode of what they call Season 5, which is a two-parter, but especially the second part, the time-hopping stuff, is absolutely frantic and wonderful. And you're going to hear some of some of the earlier stuff from the 1940s, a story from 1940, I'll look it up, by his bootstraps. But first, I wanted to talk about that a little bit more and a couple of notes. Here's a note. I watched on TV, on Amazon Video Flowing. It's on Amazon Prime. I'm not sure whether I suspect you can probably just pay for it. The Man in the High Castle. Allegedly based on the novel by Philip K. Dick. And first of all, I liked it. Let's start with that before, as I am going to dissect it to an extent and not tear it apart, I liked it. But do not think that what you are getting is the novel, The Man in the High Castle. It is, in fact, almost less of the novel, The Man in the High Castle, which is co-produced by Ridley Scott, than Ridley Scott's movie Blade Runner is based on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. There is passing resemblance, and possibly even less resemblance in this than in that. But here it works better. And the analogy that I have been using is if you saw the TV series Fargo, it really does not relate to the movie. It's not a retelling of the story that is in the movie. It is rather its own story set in that same universe. There is absolutely no connection between the TV series Fargo and the movie Fargo, other than A, it's obviously very much an homage to the Coen brothers. It draws similar but different characters. There is a suitcase. That is identical. That's about it. But it is its own thing. Very well done. And it's very safe to say, if you like the movie Fargo, you would like the TV series Fargo. Well, The Man in the High Castle is not the novel by Philip K. Dick, but it clearly takes place in the universe that Dick created for that book, which many would argue, and I think I would agree with them, is the best alternate universe alternate history universe ever written, and takes place in what was, for the book, the present time, 1962. And the U.S. is divided into three zones: a neutral zone, which is pretty much from the Rockies and heading north and south. East of there is controlled by Nazi Germany, and west of there is controlled by Japan. And that structure is what drives this story. There are some similar characters, some similar ideas, but outside of that, you're not going to find the same story. There is a reference to an underground movement that is the underground movement from The Man in the High Castle that we come close to meeting, but not fully. And that is true here as well. Now, mind you, this is only the pilot for a series. And I